Monday morning can be jarring under the best of circumstances. It may be even more so for millions of Americans in the week ahead, as they rub sleep from their eyes and ask, where is Bob Edwards? A whole generation of Americans has heard the news, first thing in the morning, from Bob Edwards. Wars, fads, and governments have come and gone. Communism crumbled, hip-hop ascended, space shuttles plummeted, and the World Wide Web took off. A whole generation of history, from Jimmy Carter to Wyclef Jean, has transpired, while Bob Edwards has gone to bed before dark and gotten up to shake Americans ever so gently from their slumber with...
Good morning. Today is Guy Fawkes Day. Guy's plot to blow up Parliament was discovered on this day in 1605. Today is the beginning of National Split Pea Soup Week, and it's the debut of this program.
Bob Edwards is leaving the show. He's hosted for almost 25 years and will become a special correspondent for NPR News. He's also about to depart on a book tour. Earlier this week, before his last show on Friday morning, we asked him to join us in our studios.
And I survived that beginning. Wow.
Who was that guy? Not nearly as good a voice as the one you have.
It's true. I hear old tapes, and I don't know if was the tape stretched or something, or did I really sound that way? But
you know, I mean, over the last few weeks, you have been... I've seen so many references to the warm baritone. When did you first know you had the voice?
When I would answer the phone and everyone would say, hello, Mr. Edwards, and start... I don't know if we had telemarketers in those days.
What, you were like 9 years old or something?
But they thought I was dead. And they would ask me to read aloud in class a lot and read in church. And I knew what I was going to do anyway, so it was good practice.
And you came to NPR after a nationwide search for a place that was commensurate with your talents, right? Is that ever called the story?
I came to NPR because I was fired from the Mutual Broadcasting System because I was a big union guy. They didn't like that over there. Mm-hmm. And picked up the phone book and called everything that had radio in its name. And a fellow named Rich Firestone answered the phone. And he said, well, come on down. I think there's some projects underway. And they didn't know what they were doing. They were only in their third year, had no standards at all, so they hired me.
We've put together some clips, but we have some reason to think these are some interviews that you're... No, come on, all right? We've been working. Dolly Parton. Will you help me explain why we love interviewing Dolly Parton?
Well, because she does everything for you. You don't have to work at all. She will carry the interview, and besides that, she's just a brilliant talent. What's the funniest thing you've ever read about yourself?
Oh, mercy. There's been some good ones. In fact, one said something about that I was pregnant. Of course, I'm a little too old for that now. But one said I was down in my back because my boobs were so heavy that I was just totally crippled with it. Then the next one came out that I was having this affair with some young boy, and the next one said I was having an affair with some young woman. I thought, Betty, for a woman flat on her back, I'm getting around. These old bones.
See, she's there with the punchline every time, and she's got him. Cost a lot of money to look this cheap.
Yeah. Let me ask about George Shearing. This was an interview, 1995, according to my notes. George Shearing, we should explain, great jazz pianist. Do we say sightless?
Yes. Someone told me that you helped a blind man across the street.
That's correct. I heard this cane. I said, can I help you? He said, would you just see me across the street? And I said, yes, take my arm. And I wasn't using a cane, and he was, and I listened. There was no traffic. I took him across the street, and he followed me up the curb, and I said, do you need any more assistance? He said, no, I'm fine now. And he never knew from that day to this that it was a very clear-cut case of the blind leading the blind.
You're making that up.
No, I'm not making that up. That happened during World War II. And with the blackout, I saw a lot of people back to their hotels.
I go for any interview that leads me in an area that, well, it surprises me, that I'm learning something new along with the listener. And George Shearing is a great example. Mm-hmm. I thought we were going to talk about music. And now we're talking about the Blitz in World War II and how entire blocks would disappear while he was doing a performance somewhere, and he would have to lead people home, sighted people, because they had no landmarks. Landmarks meant nothing to him. That was great stuff.
Let me ask you about some of the signature quirks that we've learned about, if this isn't bringing the curtain up too much. When you do birthdays every morning, you don't believe in doing a birthday of someone who needs to be identified, like former Secretary of the Treasury, Nobel novelist, something like that.
If they have titles, I give them their title. But you should know who these other people are. And I'm afraid to put a single identifier, because some of them have many roles and many skills and many different dimensions, and it's kind of demeaning them to give them one little identifier.
President Carter was listening one morning and heard a particularly significant birthday.
Yes. Yes, I did Rosalind's birthday, and he had forgotten.
Well, he had a lot on his mind, after all.
And he's, out jogging, he's got the Walkman, and here's, it's her birthday. I think I probably saved his marriage right there.
We got to talk about Red.
Yeah.
Let's hear a clip.
Commentator Red Barber joins us now from Tallahassee, Florida. Red, good morning.
It's a good morning down here, Bob. It's clear. The forecast is possible showers this evening. And right here by my stopwatch, I'm looking at a beautiful Julio Nuzio variegated camellia.
The Julio Nuzio, eh?
That's right. The Julio Nuzio is the parent camellia, and that's probably won more awards than any other camellia.
Well, Red, since we last talked, we've gotten ourselves into a little war here, and the debate is going on whether these playoff games for the NFL and the National Hockey League All-Star Game should be played.
Bob,
I remember when Red passed away. I think it was a listener who wrote, and you read this on the air, that what we were listening to for those 12 years was the evolution of a friendship.
Yeah, and it grew on me because, in the beginning I was terrified of it. For one thing, he would turn the tables. He would ask me questions. I don't want to be asked questions in a live broadcast like that. I want to be doing the interview. And he wanted it live, not pre-recorded. And so that's how it was, and that's how it remained for 12 years. And I bless him for that, because I got so much out of that. I was learning radio on Red Barber. And then listeners were so positive about the segment that I thought, well, how dumb am I? If they're having a good time, I've got to learn to like this too. And eventually I was just as warm to it as they were. But that took some doing to get over my own fears and feelings of inadequacy. That's why I say it made me a better broadcaster.
Yeah. Another clip of tape. All this talk we've heard over the past few weeks about your warm baritone, which is true. Some of us thought about a time, I think it was, let me conveniently check my notes. 1989, you got a letter from Farmer.
Dear Morning Edition folks, I usually listen to you in the early morning when I am operating a tractor on the farm.
Who complained that the hum, the thrum of his John Deere was exactly at the same pitch as your voice.
If I cut the RPMs back just a little, the noise is in tune with Daniel Shore. Could somebody squeeze them or have them breathe a low-percentage helium mixture while they're on the air? What are you saying, Mr. Grace? I sound like an old Ford? I'm not sure Edward R. Murrow would approve, but very well.
Taking a balloon.
Our address is Morning Edition Letters, National Public Radio, Washington, D.C., 20036.
Auditioning for Oz. When you mentioned the farmer, I thought you were going to talk about the woman who, I think she's from Ohio, who was complaining that I was disturbing her cattle. They were hearing me on the fence posts or something.
Did she expect you to do something about it?
Was irate. I mean, you can't disturb people's cattle. My cattle demographic was way up there, and I was going to protect them.
Absolutely. You were always very big among the bovines. Still are, as a matter of fact. Yeah,
no, and others tossing bull.
Here's what I think my first memory of you is. I had a mental image when I listened to you, when you and Susan Stamberg were doing All Things Considered. A gentleman in his mid-40s, maybe just beginning to silver at the temples. Sort of Savile Row pinstripe suit.
Well, you had that right.
And I remember old WBEZ in Chicago, All Things Considered. You were coming out to host All Things Considered the week right before the election. And I remember the door being kind of thrown open and a man wearing bicycle boots and a leather jacket came in slammed down his leather carrying case and said,
"How late are the bars open in this damn town?"
And my memory is I looked up and said, "Oh, you're not Bob Edwards."
Where was my entourage that day?
You'd given them the slip. Oh, okay. And I took some pride in being able to tell you, a lot of the bars are open till 4 a.m., Mr. Edwards. But back in those days, you had a voice that was older than you. Your physical appearance mm-hmm. could surprise people.
Oh, yeah. Listeners always said, "We expected a much older gentleman." They stopped saying that a long time ago.
You have a book. You're going to be on tour for more than 50 stops. Edward R. Murrow and the Birth of Broadcast Journalism. Is NPR doing to you what CBS did to Ed Murrow?
No. Murrow got in trouble by doing controversial broadcasts. Hmm. I wish I could say that was the case. They're taking me off the air because I am so controversial and bold. And no, that's not the case. I think it's tastes change and they have different ideas about the program and who should be doing it, and that's cool. But it wasn't because I was making it bad for business.
Terrible hours to work, but is there a particular pleasure knowing when you go on the air, you are bringing the news mm-hmm. to millions of people?
Yeah, and they haven't heard it before because they've been asleep like they should be and like I should have been. I like sitting at the microphone and being on the radio. That's still a kick. I don't know how you do anything else, so I better be happy with this.
Bob, thank you.
You're welcome. I always hate people who say thank you to thank you.
Bob Edwards, for 25 years, the man more Americans wake up with than anyone else.
Remember for our 20th anniversary, Sharon, my
wife,
did a commentary. She said, all these years, women have come up to me and said,
"I wake up with your husband every day."
She says, "That's funny. I never wake up."
And many more of Bob's most memorable interviews are on our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.